This episode is sponsored by the On with Origins podcast. Learn how crediting experts conquer today's toughest challenges while driving measurable results. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. Now on to the show.
Buddy, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome back to our continued coverage of the 2023 NACUSO Network Conference here in lovely Las Vegas. And look who's in the studio lounge, Mr. Glenn Servati from 154 Advisors. How are you, Glenn?
Good to see you, Mike. I'm doing good.
Good, good. This is a great way to start out my day. It's like, what time? Oh my gosh, it's not even 8 o'clock yet, Glenn.
I'm still on East Coast time, so I'm doing just fine.
Oh, you're doing fine. It's a little early for this kid. No, we're good. We're all good. It's a good way to start out the day to talk with Mr. Glenn Servati. So the question I'm asking everybody, just start out with, how's the conference going for you? Any highlights or anything like that?
I just love, the level of interaction that, you know, continues to happen. I love the competition type things, you know, the dog and pony kind of Shark Tank type of
things.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
So yesterday we had Next Big Idea.
That was fun.
That was great. I know you were talking to Tanya from Goal Setter. I saw that. And then we got the FinTech Madness, which is a different kind of format coming up tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm really interested to see how that plays out as
a little Final Four-ish format for the FinTech, so that Kirk Drake and his crew are putting together. Yeah. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
And biggest, biggest conference here yet.
That's right.
And I'm always fascinated, too. I don't know if this is like a little kind of intended to be a secret, but it's NACUSO, but so many of the players here are not technically CUSOs, which I find very interesting, too, in the fact that, you know, obviously the part of the benefit is to see, I think a lot of people, I've heard them, even non-CUSOs, saying, I've talked to folks who tell me, you know, if you were a CUSO, it opens more doors.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a recruiting tool as well.
Of course. Oh, yeah. Bring them in and check and see how cool it is. Oh, yeah. And this is a great example. I mean, there's a ton of, we're in the exhibit hall here, and right behind the camera, there's a ton of organizations on display for sure.
So. Well, not only is it the biggest conference in terms of attendance, this is clearly the biggest conference hall too that we've had at NACUSO that I'm aware of.
Yeah, me too. It seems to get bigger and bigger each year, which is good news for the industry. So let's talk about something that's been in the headlines for the last couple weeks,
three
weeks,
something like that. It's amazing. It feels like forever, but I happen to remember that it broke on my wife's birthday.
So
it was kind of early March. I'm sure she had plenty to do with it. Yeah.
I know. Yeah,
she took out a lot of money for dinner that night.
That's what happened. As you guys don't know, we're talking about Silicon Valley Bank and the other bank, the bank issues that are going on.
Signature Bank was the other one that came very quickly afterwards. Signature.
Signature.
Let's not start rumors.
Okay. Before we get into that topic, though, I was really interested. I saw a story that I can't remember which bank or whatever organization bought Signature.
Yes.
But they didn't purchase the digital assets division of the bank. I find that very interesting.
I wonder. Well,
like,
a couple of things. Well, it was
too new for them.
It was the digital assets. I think might have been in part headline risk. I mean, so much of this was emotionally driven, and this is great because we're getting to the latest. The problem with something like SVP that I've discovered, I've tried to hold back on a lot of talking about it because the news becomes obsolete within 36 hours when the next news cycle hits.
Sure.
So yeah, the news broke this week that First Citizens in Charlotte bought, or someplace in North Carolina, bought the assets. Mm-hmm. So they're continuing.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Yes, the majority of it.
See,
you know
way more about this than
I. But you're right; they did not take. But one of the things that, you know, the headline risk that you run into with things like this is the word on the street was that, you know, Silicon Valley Bank was the VC, the Silicon Valley, you know, the tech community bank, which included a lot of crypto. And it wasn't, again, people, I think the average person doesn't understand, doesn't mean they held crypto,
right,
but they were banking crypto companies. And I think if that went with them, it's like, oh, well, they're just taking out all the same headaches that Silicon Valley Bank had. So whether or not those are well-performing assets at some point becomes immaterial, because if it, you know, spooks your investors and your existing customers, it's probably more trouble than you want to bite off.
Right, yeah.
And I'm sure that the FDIC was more than happy to find somebody to find a home for the 70-80% that is just operating absolutely
fine.
That
might be a good investment down the road.
Well, their stock popped. I don't know if you saw. I think people did definitely. Which is often the case when, you know, someone takes on the assets of a closed bank, because the FDIC wipes clean all the bad stuff in the portfolio.
Oh.
So you're getting about as squeaky clean a bank as you're going to
get
when that happens.
Right on. So share with me what you know the latest on Silicon Valley Federated Bank, and then how it's affecting the credit union industry. I think that we want to kind of bring it home here.
Well, that's really where I've been focusing on the whole piece, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, just going back to, you know, and a lot of people probably know this already by now, but it was kind of, it took a while for this information to dribble out, was, you know, the issue with Silicon Valley Bank, you know, usually we've got this, you know, basic, you know, we had FDIC insurance, which I remember back when it was still $25,000, up to $25,000.
Aren't there rumors that they want to raise it? Somebody
well,
wants to
I don't know that they're actually going
to
raise it, but you know they've almost implicitly raised it to unlimited right now, the way things are working. They haven't done that in writing, but the way they treated it, that's kind of the way it worked.
I see.
But you know, it was I had remembered, and my memory was false, it turned out, that they raised it from 100 to 250 as a result of the financial crisis back in 2008.
Really?
They actually did it earlier than that.
It was
about 5 years before that they moved up to 250.
I always thought it was like 250 for a really long, long time.
But it has been. It was. It was like since like the mid-2000s.
Okay.
Ironically, I mean, that just makes people comfortable. It avoids bank runs because I've got $250,000 that I know I'm going to get back, no questions asked. How many people does that leave out? I mean, that's pretty much the vast majority
big
of depositors.
Yeah.
And when we were talking about the Great Recession and the problems there, all the issues were on the credit side. It was the actual loans that the banks had made that was the issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's always a new crisis. Mm-hmm. People always get hit with something that wasn't expected. Mm-hmm. In this case, it was the depositors who got nervous. And who has more than $250,000 in a bank? Businesses.
Yeah.
Big businesses.
Yeah.
Venture capital firms.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, startup companies who raised millions of dollars from venture companies and put it in the bank because they know they're spending cash pretty quickly over time. So they've got that there. So there's all these companies there that, because of the nature of Silicon Valley Bank, if you want to talk about concentration risk, I think you can definitely make an argument there that they had way too much of that type of activity. But lots and lots of their customers had millions, if not billions.
God.
There were several that had hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank. And suddenly when word came out, that is the definition of, you know, a 1930s style bank run, but on steroids, because you're not talking about somebody, you know, driving over from their, you know, three-bedroom home who wants to make sure they don't lose their last $5,000. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a CFO who doesn't want to lose his last $500 million. So that's what happened. And if you looked at the statistics, Silicon Valley Bank had 93, I've seen different numbers, between 93 and 96% of its deposits were uninsured, meaning it was over the $250,000 threshold, which kind of makes sense because they really were not a consumer bank at all.
Yeah, so
they were entirely a business bank. So that's the only kind of accounts they had.
And the companies that they catered to were pretty pretty significant players.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
in that area.
So then the hedge funds and other folks who were looking, you know, and I get into these interesting conversations where, you know, yes, it's nice short selling and all those types of things, you know, enforces discipline in the market. When you're in the middle of a crisis, it's also somebody yelling fire in a crowded building, so you get that kind of a challenge. They started doing the analysis, the hedge funds did. What are the other banks that have very high percentages of uninsured deposits? Maybe they might have problems as well. Maybe if we make it known that they have a high percentage of uninsured deposits, then something that probably would never have been a problem before because the depositors weren't worried about it, suddenly start reading about it, and then it becomes that whole, well, I don't want to be the last one that's left holding the bag. Maybe I'll take my money out first, and then the next thing you know, more and more people.
Yeah, momentum.
So that's what you started to see at Silicon Valley Bank. Now, the interesting thing, and this is now pretty well documented, I spent a little bit of time kind of doing some research at the beginning of this, there were other banks that had in the 70, 80% uninsured deposit, mostly very business-oriented banks.
Mm-hmm.
And again, let's cut to the chase. Credit unions are incredibly well-positioned on this because they have very few business accounts, and the consumers are not banking $250,000 plus for the most part.
Right.
So a little bit more research. I think it was Reuters who put out this study in the course of the last you know, week or so.
Mm-hmm.
The top, I think they looked at the top 100 banks in the U.S. that had an average of 36% uninsured deposits, which is more than I would have expected, and I suspect a lot more than it was as recently as, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But that's a lot less than 90%.
Mm-hmm.
Credit unions, 7%.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We are in much, much better shape.
That is a big difference.
And you know, from that standpoint, I don't think we have very much concern there at all. But the challenge is, you know, again, the average person is not going to know this. And if they start hearing about it, one of the, and this is the one that kind of really frustrated me, one of the headlines that we started seeing is, in fact, I think that was another Reuters headline that I saw, small banks have seen a record number of deposit outflows over the course of the last, because the rationale that came up is too big to fail. Which banks are going to, where are your deposits going to be the safest? Mm-hmm. It's going to be at the really, really big banks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's take our money out of the small, this is the logic.
Right.
Let's take our money out of the small banks, we'll put it in the really big banks.
Right.
And, you know, the headline was, that's what happened. A record number, according to the FDIC, a record number of, you know, deposits came out of small banks.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not watching video, that was an air quote.
In quotes.
Then you go out beyond the headline and read a little bit in. What's your definition of a small bank?
Or a small credit union. A small credit union, probably 250 and under, 250 million and under.
Nice. Maybe 25 billion.
As a small bank?
Well, the way that they define small bank was anybody outside the top 25 banks in the country.
Oh.
Which would basically leave, you know, in number of banks, that's 99.X% of mm-hmm. all banks.
Mm-hmm.
I would strongly suspect people probably saw First Republic had a dramatic, they were basically right on the cusp of what would be called a small bank.
Mm-hmm.
People
mm-hmm.
in the credit union world, people in the community bank world, nobody calls them a small bank. So the definitions of a small bank, and I was talking to some friends on Wall Street, and every time they kept talking about the small banks, I had to keep saying, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, you know, banks with only $20 billion of assets.
Only?
Yeah. I mean, we got one credit union with over 50.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we got maybe three with over 25.
Yeah. yeah.
So, you know, it really puts
it in perspective.
And putting more in perspective, and I'm going to give credit to Jill Castilla, if you don't follow
yeah,
her, Citizens
I do.
Bank
Big
of Edmond.
Fan.
She's made a lot of, you know, good points online. She says, all these conversations, when she thinks of small banks, the same thing that we would think of as small credit unions, you know, a billion, I'll even go as high as a billion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She said she has heard nothing about any deposit outflows.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, she said that she was asked for her information mm-hmm. by the FDIC.
Mm-hmm.
She sent it in. It showed actually a slight increase over the period.
Good for her.
But again, nobody's hearing that piece of the story because mm-hmm. the story is about the small banks as
right.
in the, you know, the ones that are just not chasing Wells.
Well, yeah, also looking at it from a journalist point of view or a news point of view and all these stories, you can't regurgitate the same story on every channel. So these folks are looking for some sort of a little bit of shock value
yeah.
to get the viewers, to get the readers.
Yeah.
So yeah, so they're massaging headlines and
I mean,
doing all sorts of real
it's frustrating stuff. As frustrating as I find that, it always reminds me, because we think of this clickbait now is what
of
we call
course.
It.
Of course, oh my gosh.
But
yeah.
I was comparing it to, I remember,
all
you know,
numbers.
Or you know, either on TV, but I remember even like walking to the train station at the end of the day, and you'd still have the people standing on the street corner holding up a paper. Read all about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, such and such. It's
mm-hmm.
like, they've got to come up with something exciting to tell you so you actually paid them
exactly.
the quarter to get the paper.
Exactly, yeah. It's the same today.
And this one, I mean, it's a fairly complex message.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect, and that's why I thought it was interesting. I mentioned my wife's birthday, great birthday dinner conversation. I brought
I
it
bet.
Up to her. I said, have you heard of Silicon Valley Bank? She goes, oh yeah, all my friends at work are talking about it. Are
oh,
you
really?
No. She's like, are you nuts? No, I've never heard of it. It took like four more days, you know.
Nobody heard of Silicon Valley Bank until
this
happened. Except for the people that worked there.
Well, there was another headline that said, a bank no one's ever heard of may take down the U.S. financial system.
Oh, but talking about shock value.
I don't know. I've been hearing about Silicon Valley Bank. I mean, they're big in the payments and fintech
yeah,
space.
Yeah,
that's what I do.
Right.
If people didn't know about the 15th largest bank in the country, if no one had heard of the 15th largest bank in the country, that's a little strange.
Well, I think your general consumer out there,
right?
Wells Fargo, B of A, you know, that's pretty much the extent
exactly.
of it. So.
Exactly.
So,
I mean, the message that I come away with, this was a problem. I also think that the regulators are getting beat up more than they should have on this one. If you want to get into that, we can talk about it. But the bottom line is, it was a very unique situation. And when you see the headlines, I think it's important to see all the details behind it. I'm not claiming that they're intentionally misleading anybody, but trying to get things down into a soundbite,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you lose so much of the context
oh, yeah,
that is particularly important when you're talking about literally the majority, of the 95 to 100%
mm-hmm.
of the credit unions
mm-hmm.
and 60 to 75% of the banks in the country
yeah.
are absolutely unaffected.
Yeah. Landon Glenn turned me on to a podcast. I think it's called All In. And it's these four really high up guys. I'll have to show it to you, but I can't remember who the guys are, but they're really high up in the financial services arena and technology and all this stuff. They're investors and all the type of stuff. But anyway, he turned me on to this this podcast, and they talked about this the Silicon Valley Bank situation, and they to share with you, or to kind of support your complexity of this story statement, all four of them had a different take on what happened with Silicon Valley Bank. Yeah, it was fascinating. I'll show it to you after our recording. But it was really interesting. I didn't listen to the whole thing because, oh my gosh, a lot of this stuff goes way over my head. It's really good though. So,
well, it was interesting. I mentioned
four different takes on it.
I had a friend who works on Wall Street on the bond trading side, mm-hmm. and another friend of mine who, you know, we had a conversation thread going on other topics, and we mentioned Silicon Valley Bank, mm-hmm. and then he quickly came back and said, I'm living this right now, please take me off the thread, because clearly there was a conflict of interest where he had to be dealing. Then about 3 hours later he said, okay, I can talk about it now.
Good.
So I got a really good insight, but he had to go, to his credit, he was able to go quiet kind of, because he had clients, I guess, who were dealing with Silicon mm-hmm. Valley, you know, mm-hmm. bondholders.
Yeah.
And again, there's this talk about a bailout, and the question is, who's being bailed out? And mm-hmm. I think, again, the average person, I don't think, understands, the shareholders of Silicon Valley Bank were wiped out.
Yeah.
The bondholders of Silicon Valley Bank were wiped
mm-hmm.
out.
Mm-hmm.
The people who were saved were the deposit holders. You can argue that maybe some of them were large enough that maybe they didn't deserve to be saved, that they should have been doing their own homework.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about the lesser of two evils and the ability to actually keep this from spreading to mm-hmm. lots of other places mm-hmm. where people say, oh, maybe my money's at risk, I better grab
it. Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad price to pay.
Yeah, agreed. All right, I want to wrap up with this. Yeah. I'm the eternal optimist here. So is there a positive spin on this story? And if so, what is it in your mind?
The positive spin is, I think we've gotten at least, you know, I'm not going to say the trail is, and the trail is at the end, where there's a long road
still
ahead
in
of
the
us.
Middle of it, yeah.
And as I said before, I mean, I'm going to jinx us, because by the time you put this up on the web, you know, the story may change. But I believe we've really weathered the worst of this storm.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be lots of recriminations and finger pointing and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff that goes on mm-hmm. for some time. But the good news is that I think we've gotten past the first big hurdle on
mm-hmm.
this one.
Mm-hmm.
The other is, I've talked to people who, you know, there were products out there that actually helped larger deposit holders syndicate their holdings
mm-hmm.
across multiple banks to basically, you know, I can keep $250,000 here, $250,000,
and then
I can move around. Somebody told me that there was a product, and I'd have to do more research on this, that was being marketed. And again, back then I think it was $25,000 because the insurance limit was so much lower.
Yeah.
Back in like the early 90s,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And someone said, "Why would I? That's just so much hassle. Why would I bother doing that? It's just not. You did the risk return trade off.
Mm-hmm.
It was still the administrative cost of doing it.
Yeah.
Guess what? The risk return trade off just changed. There may be a product opportunity."
Yep.
And at the end of the day, may actually create a more efficient and safe
gosh,
market.
Oh my gosh, that's exactly what I was thinking. Is like people are going to like start, disseminating their money into several financial institutions.
And I actually just saw just earlier this week. Sure enough, I mean, they must have still already had the product at least sitting on the shelf that wasn't getting a lot of attention. A decent sized ad in the Wall Street Journal with a QR code saying, "We can do this for you. Click here to find out how."
Oh my!
So someone's
gosh.
Already on that.
Kind of like a Buzzsprout for
exactly.
for your finances at several banks and credit unions. Oh, good stuff, Glenn. I could talk to you all day about this stuff. I know you have a schedule. We all have schedules here, and we want to be respectful of your time. But thank you so much for this.
Always enjoy it.
Great education. So you know way more about this than most. So I'm always happy to have you here.
I get a little obsessed.
That's all right. It's a good obsession, sir. Glenn, thank you so much.
Good talking to you.
Well done, sir. Glenn Sarvati from 154 Advisors. Go check him out. Doing some really good stuff for credit unions and a wealth of knowledge right here next to me. Good stuff.
Thanks.
Well done, sir.
A quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. This episode is sponsored by the On with Origins podcast. Learn how crediting experts conquer today's toughest challenges while driving measurable results.